It is now time for my check, so we're sorry about that little delay, a glitch in the phone system. So far this year, ladies and gentlemen, over 600 reported murders in Jamaica. We're just at about 5 months and 4 days into the year. How did we get to this slippery slope? And how can we end this? We need all hands on deck, ladies and gentlemen. Is it now time? Is it now time for church leaders and churches to now lead the violence prevention intervention? Professor Rosalie Hamilton will talk to us this morning. Anthony, please introduce the guests.
Well, our special guest once again on Mic Check this morning, her name Professor Rosalie Hamilton, and she is the CEO of Lasco Chin Foundation. And Professor Hamilton was vice president at the University of Technology in Jamaica from 2008 to 2018, and she was awarded a professorship in the Scotiabank Chair in Entrepreneurship and Development. She established and led the MSME Alliance, a network of small business organizations, and this was for 10 years. She also established the Institute of Law and Economics, and she worked as a consultant and public educator on trade, governance, gender, and other areas of economic and social development. And during the period February 2020 to June 2021, more than 1.5 million trees were planted across the Caribbean thanks to her efforts. And in June 2021, she was invited to be a distinguished scholar in the P.J. Patterson Center for African Caribbean Advocacy. So we welcome Professor Hamilton to Grooving Radio once again this Saturday morning.
Good morning, Professor. How are you?
I am fine. Good morning.
As I welcome you to Grooving Radio this Saturday morning, my first question, how is Jamaica and how are you doing?
Well, you know, under the circumstances with all the challenges coming out of COVID and the persistent crime wave and so on, I am certainly doing well. And, you know, we're doing the best we can under trying circumstances.
Great, great, great. Well, you mentioned the crime situation in Jamaica, Professor Hamilton, and as a part of the advocacy group down there in Jamaica, we have to keep a watchful eye, and we have been keeping a watchful eye on what's happening in Jamaica when it comes to crime and violence. And I'm now wondering, where did we lose this? Where did we lose this, Professor? I'm also wondering if our education system plays a part in this, because it seems as if almost everyone who is involved with this in terms of crime, protecting Jamaica from the crime and violence, seems as if they have lost it. And I don't want to make it sound like that, but we're on a slippery slope, huh?
Yes, quite so. I think the challenge is that there's a kind of multi-pronged approach that's absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. And it has to happen simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Therein lies the complexity, because the factors that are driving this are also multidimensional. Mm-hmm. So you talked about education. At the heart of it is this issue of education. Mm. We have this kind of apartheid education system where only a few get good quality education. Mm-hmm. We just recently had a Patterson report that described our education system. And it's there for all to see. Mm-hmm. We have real challenges. We have early childhood institutions. Most of them are not certified to give the kind of quality education that we absolutely need. Mm-hmm. The kids are failing from the school system. And so there's a range of issues that needs to be done just in that area of education. But, you know, there are also psychological legacies and issues coming out, not only from our colonial history way back then, but just the trauma of living in crime-prone communities. Mm-hmm. This is evident when we have in the work that we're doing in the Lasco Chin Foundation. Mm-hmm. We've assessed these kids, and the kids are coming into school with very low levels of the kind of self-esteem that's required to give them a fighting chance. They're borderline facing depression and, you know, lacking in self-confidence and so on, and disruptive behavior. Those are signs that we're seeing. There are international reports that have been done and talk about the kind of high levels of trauma that kids face in Jamaica, coming out of, you know, punishment, quote unquote, from the parents, you know, in terms of beatings and so on. You know, there are lots of issues. We layer on that housing issues, you know, challenges of adequate income to drive households. You know, we boast about high employment rates, but many of the jobs are low-end jobs, and it's difficult for people to make ends meet. You've just seen that we've just moved the minimum wage up. Still, it's not a living wage. And, you know, we can go on about the issues of governance and, you know, the issues of corruption and so on that we see at the highest levels of our society, and these percolate down. In fact, we're not sure which direction this, you know, set of activities are taking place, criminal activities.
And, you know, Anthony, we just don't want people to think we're talking about only crimes in Jamaica, gun crimes in Jamaica, because we here in the United States, we have a gun terror going on in terms of the amount of mass shooting that we are seeing here in the United States. I think so far we have seen some 233 mass shooting here in these United States. But when we look at little Jamaica, so far this year, and we're only 4 days into the 6 month of the year, over 600 reported murders in Jamaica. But Professor, you said something there, you know, and I want to go back there. And I want to go back to the education. I want to go back to, you know, the trauma that some of our children are going through. I mean, who is assessing these children? Who knows how far gone these children are? Some of these kids are going to school. They're dyslexic. Some of them have all kind of mental issues that we don't even know about, Professor. But yet still, they're able and they're pushed through school. Is it because of the way the system is set up why we're having this kind of things happen in the school system and no one is catching up on it?
Absolutely so. I think we're beginning to understand, certainly in the U.S., I think the whole movements of Black Lives Matter has brought home the idea of institutional racism, right? The institutions that persist, perpetuate these behaviors. I would say the same thing is true in our education system. The system of education perpetuates the under-education and miseducation of our kids. And that's been going on from colonial days. And so significant changes are required to upgrade the system and to ensure that the kids have a fighting chance. And we definitely have to move away from this idea that if you go to a few of the traditional schools, you get good education, and if you don't, then you're stuck. Now, there have been changes, and it's important to say this, that there have been several efforts over the years to try to make changes in the education system. We have, for example, the alternative pathways now that exist. And these are efforts in the right direction. Clearly, it's not adequate when you see the perpetuation of these kinds of behaviors and the outcomes that are done. So we have to continually going back to the board, the drawing board, to ensure that we can do it. I want to put the crime problem in perspective, though, because the United Nations have considered any homicide rate of any country of more than 10 homicides per 100,000 is an epidemic. I repeat that, 10 per 100,000. In 2020, Jamaica's homicide rate was 46.5 per 100,000. And we were the highest in the hemisphere, in Latin America. And for the past decade or more, the only countries that had higher homicide rates than us were in Latin America. So in 2020, we topped Latin America in terms of the highest murder rate, arguably the highest murder rate in the world. In 2021, that homicide rate went to 49.4. Remind you, homicide rate of 10 per 100,000 is from the UN, United Nations assessment, is epidemic. We have a crisis on our hands. For about 17 consecutive years, we have seen more than 1,000 murder rates in Jamaica. And we're en route to 18 years.
And when you look at these reports, you talk about the reports of corruption where Jamaica was perceived to be the fifth most corrupted country per capita. Jamaica, the most murderous country per capita in Latin America in 2021. You talk about that 17-year span. And we could date this back to 1979. And if you go back to 1979, leading into the 1980 election, there was a spike in murders in Jamaica and a spike in criminal activities in Jamaica that up until this moment, it seems it has not been trending down since. It's been trending in one direction. I'm also wondering about the chemical imbalance in our citizens now, because some of us seems to have grown accustomed to this, Professor Hamilton. And it's not something that we should be accustomed to. This is not normal. You talk about 49.4%, 49.4 per every 100,000. There's also a report that I'm waiting to see coming out of Jamaica that over the last couple of weeks, it has been reported that there's somewhere between 7 to 10 murders per day. 7 to 10 murders per day. I was told by sources within the JCF yesterday that the Commissioner of Police will be having a press conference come next week, Tuesday. But I'm wondering, after all these press conferences, after all this talk, how is it we cannot seems to get any kind of control on this, Professor Hamilton? It is just spinning further and further away to the left. How come?
Well, you know, again, I think there is too much acceptance of the status quo. There is too much acceptance that the idea that we don't need significant changes in our institutions. They're not fit for purpose. Many of our institutions, including our educational institution, were set up during the colonial era. And it was set up with the idea that only a few people deserve good education and the majority just needs enough to cope, to work in factories or in the agricultural sector, etc., etc. That was the logic of that system. Now, the fact that in 2022 we still have a system that only significantly educates a few in terms of good education and the rest are marginalized essentially tells us something. That we have an urgent problem that has to be addressed. Now, we can spend all day talking about the problems, and I think we need to focus a bit on the solutions, because I do think we have a great opportunity now as we move towards our 60th year of independence. We need serious reflection about what that means. That includes a reflection on this growing crime problem that we have. And we have to take stock of the kinds of changes. A significant change is coming. We are going to remove the Queen of Head of State and establish a republic. And for those of us in the Advocate Network, we think this is an excellent opportunity to think about this republic as not simply removing the Queen of Head of State, but establishing a governmental system, a system of institutions that is set up for the people, by the people, in the interest of the people.
Yes.
We need to deepen our democratic institutions. We need to give voice to our people. And our people must feel empowered to make their voices heard. Mm-hmm. I think we will begin to see a new Jamaica mm-hmm. when more and more Jamaicans feel we own Jamaica. Mm-hmm. If Jamaica belongs to us and we have an obligation and a responsibility, we can't sit back and wait for our political parties and the government to do all the work. Mm-hmm. We must collaborate with them mm-hmm. and we must set up institutions in place to ensure that we can work hand in hand, step by step, with our representatives in a way that can transform our society. Mm-hmm. When we have the talents of most of us, right? Then I think we can begin to see a plethora of solutions mm-hmm. that can transform these massive problems that we have.
You talk about...
That's my hope for Jamaica.
And it's a good hope. You talk about a democratic Jamaica. And every time I look at certain news report that comes out of Jamaica, it makes me also wonder if democracy is at stake in Jamaica as we speak. Because when we look at how our indigenous people are being treated in Jamaica, that is also spinning into some... It seems as if at one point there could be some crime problem there, or there could be some criminal problem happening there between how the Maroons were responding and how the Maroons were treated, and they had to respond in a certain way. There's an article, Professor Hamilton, in the Jamaica Gleaner, and it speaks about churches and their involvement, and should the churches now get involved, church leaders, to lead the violence prevention intervention. Talk to us about that part, Professor Hamilton, because it seems as if we have also lost our spirituality. Huh?
Yes, well, you know, a few years ago, when I the Gina reported on a presentation I did in a church in Spanish Town, mm-hmm. the thinking at the time, just speaking to a church audience, mm-hmm. was that, you know, it is about all hands on deck.
Yes.
As I just said, Jamaica can, and I believe will, be transformed when we can harness all of the potential, not just some mm-hmm. of our people. The church is an important part of our society. Mm-hmm. Most Jamaicans are somehow connected to a church. Mm-hmm. And therefore, and importantly with respect to crime, the church offers one of the most profound capacity mm-hmm. to transform lives when souls are saved. We see it all the time. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not enough. Mm. We do have to tackle all of these other issues we're talking about, education, mm-hmm. housing, you know, etc. But to the extent that the churches can actively engage in the community and actively seek to improve the educational options that our children face, mm. seek to improve the infrastructural arrangements, etc. To that extent, they are closer to the problem and can do their magic with respect to transforming lives and saving souls. Mm. And I think that's the power that the church offers if it would do more of stepping out of the pulpit, so to speak, mm-hmm. and engaging the community. And I want to say that there are churches who are doing that. Mm-hmm. I just think there's not enough. Mm-hmm. You know, I work, for example, in the work we're doing in the Laskachin Foundation, we work directly with Father Sean Major Campbell mm-hmm. in Christ Church. Mm-hmm. We also work with Bishop Rowan Edwards in Lighthouse Ministry. But I also want to say there are opportunities for churches in the diaspora to collaborate with our churches. And that is happening right now with the New Testament Temple Church of God and their subsidiary, the Good Neighbors Community Outreach Agency, based in New York. And they're currently working with Operation Save Jamaica, by Pastor Bruce Fletcher, and other churches to engage actively in the community and transform those communities. They're currently rolling out, for example, a tree planting initiative to sow seeds. They call it seeds of faith, but also physical seeds that will grow into trees that can feed people mm-hmm. and deal with hunger and food insecurity mm-hmm. and, of course, tackle climate change. It mm-hmm. is these practical, actual engagement in communities that I think can touch lives and transform lives.
Ladies and gentlemen, our very special guest this morning on Mic Check here on Grooving Radio is Professor Rosalie Hamilton, former vice president at the University of Technology. Ladies and gentlemen, she now heads up the Chin Lasco Group, and she's a member of the Advocate Network in Jamaica. Anthony Turner. Anthony.
Yes, good morning again. Yeah, there are a couple of questions, but I know we're getting ready to get to the top of the hour. But something that I think has impacted the diaspora in a way, because when we're here and we get the news, whether on radio or through the, you know, the newspaper, printed media, we are very concerned about crime and violence in Jamaica. But for the most part, when folks go home and spend vacation a week, 2 weeks, and they come back, and we ask, how was it? What's the crime situation in Jamaica? We always hear that, no man, it's not so bad, you know, when you're down there, it really not so bad. So, what's the real situation? Is it a cause for concern that when we're here and we're hearing the news, we should be concerned? Or is it the situation that when you go home, you know, it's really not so bad?
Well, remember, most of us who live here don't face the problem day to day in our lives. And depending on the homes and community you go to, you'll be fine. I mean, I live here in Jamaica and I don't live in fear. But I am aware of the problem. Mm-hmm. And increasingly, we have incidents that reminds us that this problem is creeping into communities that have had a long tradition of no crime. So it's ever present in our reality. But it is true to say that it's pockets, and members of the diaspora ought not to feel afraid to come home and to engage their families and friends and so on. Because it is that engagement that can matter. It matters for the psychological state of our people. We're always wanting to reconnect with our family and friends. Mm-hmm. And it also matters in taking this perspective that we're not all caught up in this crime problem in the same way. Mm-hmm. However, it doesn't mean that we ought not to talk about it, because it is a reality for some families. Mm-hmm. There are families who are waking up. Let me give you an instance. There's one child that is part of the program that we do. And this child is able at 9 years old to make to determine whether a gunshot that he's hearing connects with flesh or does not.
Wow.
Wow.
That's the reality of some people. Now, if it's one child in Jamaica, that should not happen. And we have to be concerned about it. And we have to talk about it. But having said that, it is true to say that you can come home to Jamaica, you can feel safe in the homes of your families and friends who are not in these crime-prone communities. Let me say this, that according to PIOJ...
Okay, Professor, Professor.
...communities are about 100.
Professor, one second. Hold your thoughts there. The computers are going to take over in 10 seconds. When we come back after the break, we will continue the conversation. Stay where you are, Professor. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Hold on.
We can do it, Lord.
Can you
warriors, see the warriors. We are calling. See the warriors. We are begging. See the warriors. We are calling. See the warriors. We are. Leave us alone and let us be.
That's right.
We're fed up with society.
True.
With violence, you rule the world. Killing little boys and girls. But I can tell you there will be a fire.
Will be.
For all the wickedness that you desire. Shedding the blood of the innocent. World War III's evidence. Why are we fighting and killing each other off all of the time? We need at the stop sign. Before you drop another bomb, just of the many lives you're gonna be taking.
And we're begging, ladies and gentlemen, to cease all war. The voice of Queen Ifrika. And that is how I welcome you back to the final 25 minutes of Groovin' Radio's presentation this Saturday morning. My name is Ras Clem, and we are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check. Our very special guest this Saturday morning is a member of the Advocate Network in Jamaica, Professor Rosalie Hamilton. She is the CEO of the Lasker Chin Foundation, and she's also the former Vice President at the University of Technology. Anthony Turner, who is our writer, is also a part of the conversation. 4 days into the month of June 2022, and so far, over 600 reported homicide in Jamaica. 49.4%, yeah? 49.4 murders per every 100,000. It is an epidemic, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, Professor.
Yes, thank you.
Welcome back, Anthony.
Yes, I'm here.
You know, I just want to go back a little, Anthony, the question you asked the professor, and she said something earlier on, and I want people to pay very close attention when we have a guest like Professor Hamilton on. I think, as she said, we've grown too accustomed, Anthony. And I think when Jamaicans from here go to Jamaica and come back, they lie. Mm. They lie. Mm. I am going to say this without any apologies. Because if I can sit here and I can see the reports that we have 7 to 10 murders a week, or 7 to 10 murders a day, whatever the report says, Anthony, the facts are there. Yes, and they're now giving out what they call a travel advisory to parishes in Jamaica. Parishes like St. James, St. Anne's, Clarendon, Westmoreland. The murder rates in those places are not ticking down. They're not ticking sideways. They're ticking one way, and they're only ticking up. And it's a problem. It's a concern. Saw another report this week, and finally, it is going to happen. More closed-circuit TVs are being put up across Jamaica. I remember when we spoke to former Deputy Commissioner of Police from Scotland Yard. His name is slipping me right now, Anthony, if you can help me. Yeah. When we spoke to the former Commissioner of Police, Anthony, he said that he has been begging Jamaica for more closed-circuit TV. Professor, will that help?
Well, let me say this. With respect to the policing interventions that are necessary, I leave that to the police judgment.
Okay.
And I suspect that these will make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
We need a multi-pronged approach.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say that won't make a difference. But I want to come back to what you said earlier. I don't think it's fair to say that people lie. Because when we come to Jamaica, when we live in Jamaica, we don't experience this macro problem of high crime rates.
Mm-hmm.
Our experience is very local.
Mm-hmm.
It's local to our families, the church we go, the stores we go, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not plagued with criminality every day.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say is that the awareness of this context is important,
mm-hmm.
because if you're not careful,
mm-hmm.
you could get caught up in some of these challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So people will come back and they'll report their experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say to Jamaicans, come on down.
Mm-hmm.
There's a diaspora conference being organized. Come.
Start next
come
week.
Come home for Christmas.
Yeah.
Come home and engage in the way we are living.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us who are living in safe spaces and places, and we want to engage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, do so being mindful of this reality.
Yes.
And you're right. It's not trivial that the U.S. now has an advisory out.
Mm-hmm.
And you should be advised by that mm-hmm. advisory.
Yes.
And be careful in certain places and parishes and so on.
Mm-hmm. The gentleman's name I was trying to remember. Thank you so much, Mr. Mikey McDonald. Mark Shields. I was trying to remember Mark Shields' name. So Professor, Anthony, you're going to ask something. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, I had a question, and it's a critical question, because there is no gun factory in Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
or maybe not even in the Caribbean that I'm aware of. So the guns have to be imported, and guns are not cheap. So So financing of guns and, you know, I mean, weapons of whatever they're using. Where's the financing coming from? Who is bringing, you know, financing the guns? Why it is no? Because a lot of the areas that we're talking about where the violence occurs, these are communities that not supposed to have a lot of money. I mean, we hear they are communities that are impoverished. So talk to us about the financing.
Well, you know, you're talking about some illicit activities that I don't have in detailed information about. Right. You're absolutely right that, mm-hmm. you know, these guns have to be financed, and some of it is being financed by drugs.
Right.
The drugs for gun trade is something that we have been aware of for some time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are troubling issues. Right. I mean, we were very troubled in Jamaica when we saw that people associated with the murders of the Haitian president.
Mm-hmm.
Right here in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are troubling issues. I mean, there's a whole guns for drugs trade coming out of Haiti and so on and so on. So these are things I don't have a lot of information about, but mm-hmm. we know that it's troubling because we don't manufacture guns in Jamaica. And
sure.
importantly, mm-hmm. Jamaica, I think your listeners should be reminded of what recently happened with respect to the firearms licensing authority.
Yes, yes,
so,
yes.
You know, we have a situation where the very governance arrangement around mm-hmm. the firearms licensing authority mm-hmm. was, I don't know how to describe it, mm-hmm. truly challenging, because mm-hmm. what we found is that some of these licenses were given to criminals.
Yes, yes. And
you know, and of course, the minister responsible, Minister Montague.
Two ministers were involved in that report, Mr. Peter Bunting and Bobby Montague. But to just follow up a little, Anthony, on the question, news came out of Jamaica this week. You talk about where the money is coming from, and I'm wondering who's doing the mathematics on this one. It is said this week that $1 billion, $1 billion is being made from scamming, lot of scamming and other activities. So when you talk about $1 billion landed wow. in Jamaica, Professor, and we talk yes. about illegal activities, do you yes. know how much that can do to hurt a country when it comes to criminal activities? And yes. in a recent interview with former retired FBI special agent Mr. Rattigan, who's going to join us tomorrow on a different situation, he spoke about how porous Jamaica is and the borders surrounding Jamaica. Jamaica has 130 something areas that there's no security, and we're talking the waters now surrounding Jamaica, where anything can be funneled through those points. So we have a serious problem, Professor.
Absolutely. The issues are very troubling. We see a lot of high-rise buildings. Mm-hmm. There are all of these allegations that a lot of that is money laundering.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is, we don't know. These are troubling allegations. I mean, the allegations about the ministers are, again, allegations mm-hmm. that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, we hear about these things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The firearm thing was troubling because, you know, we don't, as you said, we don't produce these
weapons.
Guns,
mm-hmm.
and that we have a licensing authority that ought to monitor carefully and so on. So when these allegations are made, mm-hmm. and, you know, we hear our ministers having to defend themselves,
mm-hmm.
then we are troubled.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is very hard to discern.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so we have more questions than we have answers.
Yeah.
And so I think that for those of us who are not in the forefront of this fight against crime,
mm-hmm.
We have to wish them well, continue to support those who are. I constantly have to give a shout out to the good men and women in the police force and mm-hmm. now in the JDF, the our soldiers,
mm-hmm.
because they risk their lives every day mm-hmm. to try to keep us safe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we have to support them.
One second,
of course, you would have heard the challenges they have with respect to pay.
Mm-hmm.
you know. Mm-hmm. So again, multi-pronged strategies, because pain, those who are protecting us, mm-hmm. is an important part mm-hmm. of that solution.
Mm-hmm. Professor, I want to go back to something on education, because in a recent interview with a lifelong educator at Camperdown High School, who recently earned a master's degree in special education, did we miss the beat when it comes to special education in Jamaica? Because I'm going back there now, because I recognize now that some of our youths, both boys and girls, in Jamaica are challenged. Did we miss the boat when it comes to special education and identifying children of special needs in Jamaica?
Yes, there's so much more that should be done. You know, I really think that the efforts that are being put in place needs to be ramped up, but I mm-hmm. think it's important to talk about new legislation for the disabled that have come into play over the last few years, and efforts that are being made. You know, we do have our senator, Senator Morris, who is been at the forefront mm-hmm. of this fight for making sure that there's legislation that in fact protects and provides a fighting chance mm-hmm. for the disabled community in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm. Anthony.
Yes, Professor, I wanted to talk a little bit about the judicial system, because you spoke about the police force, and they must be commended for putting their lives at risk to apprehend some of these criminals. And I'm watching and reading about the one done trial, and that's just one trial, and there are other trials, and we're seeing some of the people who are apprehended, they're walking. So is there a problem with the judicial system where they're not, I mean, after the criminals have been apprehended, they're being released back into society? What's the situation there?
Yeah, there's some concern there, because, you know, the expectation that, you know, when we put people through this process, this judicial system, that we come out at the end getting close to the truth in terms of what has happened. We know that, you know, no judicial system is perfect, and we don't always get it right. But I think recent cases are beginning to raise questions in the minds of many, and that's troubling. I mean, justice has to not only be done, but it must be perceived to be done. You know, people must have a perception that we have a judicial system that can ultimately provide the kinds of sanctions mm-hmm. that can ultimately deter crime. Mm-hmm. And when we don't see this, it is troubling. Mm-hmm. So having said that, mm-hmm. I understand that we do have reputable people in the court system, mm-hmm. Legal professionals who every day try to adhere to the legal codes of ethics and do their job well in trying to ferret out the truth. Mm-hmm. We also know that there are people who are disbarred because they don't uphold the kinds of ethical behaviors that we want in the legal profession. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, again, the perceptions are troubling, mm-hmm. and these are other issues that we have to try to tackle. Mm-hmm. And again, for me, you know, we do have this opportunity as we go forward, where we have a conversation about New Jamaica, mm-hmm. where we all can participate actively mm-hmm. and together try to solve the problem.
You know,
it would include all of these issues in the legal system.
Right. Professor, we hear about Jamaica 2030, and we hear about all these things, but it's funny how, Anthony, you asked that question, because I was talking to Mr. Christie's mm-hmm. to Mr. Christie's office from the Integrity Commission this past week. I'm trying to do something with them. And I'm wondering now, Professor, you know, you see where the Integrity Commission comes up with all these findings, all the findings. And it begs to differ now, because I'm wondering, in Jamaica, how does the system work? Who is responsible for charging these criminals? Because to my understanding is that the Integrity Commission can prosecute. Then you have the DPP, who can prosecute. And here in the United States, we depend on our Attorney General. But it seems to me in Jamaica, our Attorney General falls below where the DPP falls here. Because it seems as if Paula Llewellyn and her office, they're the ones who are leveling most of the charges on folks in Jamaica. So we kind of need to get clarity on that, how the system works. And that's why it comes back now to education. We have to have these conversations so we can educate the folks. And we have to get the experts like yourself, the professionals like yourself, to come and talk about issues that are germane, not only to us here in the diaspora, but folks in Jamaica. And I do hope, Professor, that we can break this trend where we just get up and we hear about five killings or two double murders and we act as if it's normal. That's not normal living. And I think our people should be more understanding that this is not something that we should have grown accustomed to, because it wasn't like that. And if folks listening to me can understand that the first year that Jamaica saw 100 killing, 100 shooting, was 1969. 100, and it was bad then. Think about it now. We're seeing an average minimum of over 1,000 murders for the last 17 years, Professor. Hmm?
Yes. You know, you've said a lot there. Let me say, one of the things that we're looking at, again, if we look at the big picture of the kind of systemic changes that we have, mm-hmm. is that we see, you know, these reports, you know, whether it's the Integrity Commission, the Auditor General's report, they go to Parliament, but we don't see adequate sanctions and consequences coming from these reports.
Yes.
Every year, in fact, collectively, we pay billions of Jamaican dollars every year, not millions, billions on these oversight institutions. And by and large, they do their job. They investigate. They provide reports.
Right.
And then not much happens. So we have to ask ourselves, what really ought to take place in our parliamentary arrangements that can give us better outcomes?
Yeah.
One of the things that we've been talking about is the role of these committees in Parliament and the extent to which these committees ought to not just deliberate, but deliberate with arrangements in place to hear from citizens. So they can hear directly from citizens. So you have the public sector doing their work, and they provide the kind of macro analysis and some micro analysis in terms of investigation into specific cases. But by and large, they give you these macro look at what is happening in the country with respect to spending and so on. But then hear from the people, hear from the Jamaicans who are impacted directly by these issues. And then go to the parliament, move from the committees, a report ought to be made, and we ought to get a vote that is not a partisan vote. We ought to get a vote on behalf of the citizens that our members of parliament represent.
Yes.
We perpetuate a system in which the members of parliament, by and large, vote along party lines.
Yes.
They don't break ranks.
They don't reach across the aisles.
But the issues of concern to Jamaicans cross party lines. You don't have a JLP or a PMP a member of parliament for a particular constituency that has only JLP or PMP members.
Right.
They represent everyone. And so we want to get to the point where you have real effective legislative oversight of executive decisions. And we want the members of our legislature who are not part of the executive to do their job and effectively provide the kind of oversight that matters.
Professor.
And call a spade a spade. And when they begin to do that, I think we could get better outcomes.
And we're going to end it there, Professor. We have a lot of work to do. You and I have a lot of work to do, Professor, because we talk about Jamaica ditching the Queen and becoming a republic. We have a lot of educational program to do on that, and I'll talk to you about that in the upcoming week. Because as we here celebrate Caribbean Heritage Month, 70 70 years, the Queen has been sitting on the throne. They call it the Platinum Jubilee, huh? And the Queen is celebrating those 70 years. So you and I have a lot of work to do. I always thank you, Professor, for your contribution to Grooving Radio. And based on the indication from the phone lines, Professor, there are a lot of people who have questions that they want to ask. But with the limited time we have, sometimes we just have to just stay focused and put it out there like it is. Yes, we have to start holding people responsible. Professor Rosalie Hamilton, thank you so much as always.
Thank you so much for having me. I know that we are going to actively start a public awareness campaign on June 21st. Yeah. And we look forward to your continued collaboration with us in making our voices heard.
Thank you so much, Professor. Have a blessed day. We'll talk soon.
All the best.
One love. Ladies and gentlemen, Anthony Turner, we have come to the end of another presentation here. It's a serious topic, Anthony. Crime and violence in Jamaica. When we look at the amount of people, it's an epidemic. 49.4 murders per 100,000. 49.4 murders per 100,000. It's an epidemic. Anthony Turner, thank you so much.
Yes. One love. Take care, man. Talk to you next week.
One love. We'll talk soon. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of our presentation.